this Monroe City Council meeting for Tuesday, October 22nd, 2013. At this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask if we should take roll call, please.
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Beering, Cutaback, Williams, Camp, Davis, and Hanford.
I did receive a message from Councilmember Gamble stating that he would be about 30 minutes late tonight, but that he would be here. All right, at this time, would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Tonight we have two presentations, both of which I'm very proud on behalf of the city to present to members of the audience here this evening, as well as to the residents of Monroe. And the first of which is a plaque this evening that we'd like to give to John. John, if you'd like to come up, that'd be great. That. Teresa, if you want to come up to you, certainly you can do that as well. I'll meet you right here.
You bet.
I just wanted to share a little bit here the recognition of a job very well done. Our wastewater treatment plant has received an outstanding performance award for 2012 by the Department of Ecology's Northwest Regional Office. And I'll read it here, and then I'll come down. I can read this one as well enough, or big enough lettering. So, anyways, to you and your staff, I just want to say thank you on behalf of everyone here at the City of Monroe. But this plaque is an outstanding performance award for 2012, and the Washington State Department of Ecology recognizes the exemplary effort and work accomplished by the City of Monroe and the dedicated team at the Monroe Wastewater Treatment Plant. Thank you for protecting and keeping Washington's waters clean. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor.
A few weeks ago, council was treated to a tour of the facility. And I would just like to say, or I'm going to say on your behalf, if you haven't had an opportunity to visit the wastewater treatment plant, I would recommend highly that you reach out to these two and ask for that opportunity. It's a phenomenal facility. You know, I want to think in terms of waste every day, but sure, it's one of those things that you don't want to think about it, but you're sure glad you're there. It's a great facility, and these guys have done an outstanding job, and we just want to say thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, equally as enthusiastically as we just presented an award to John and his team at the wastewater treatment plant, I'd also like to take a minute to recognize an individual this evening for 20 years of dedicated service. And so if I might ask Rick, if you could come up front to Rick Dunn, Monroe Police Department, and Chief, if you might join him. I'm going to read a letter here real quick, and then I know, Chief, you have some words that you would like to share as well in recognition of this time here. 20 years for some is a long time, but I have a feeling that 20 years for Sergeant Dunn, it's probably gone by pretty quickly. And the reason why I say that is because he is very well respected, and those who are respected as well as he is are respected because they do their job well and they enjoy it as well. And I'm only assuming that that's the case, but I think I'm probably assuming correctly because the word around town is you're a great guy, and we certainly appreciate having you here on staff as a member of the police department. So with that, I'd just like to read a letter, if I might, real quick. And that is, Dear Sergeant Rick Dunn, I write this letter in recognition to Rick Dunn for 20 years of dedicated service to the city of Monroe. Among the many duties that a mayor performs, perhaps the most rewarding is recognizing the contribution of the city's employees. As stewards of the public trust, top quality urban services must be our consistent goal. Over the past several years, citizens throughout our nation have grown to distrust all levels of government. This is even true at a local level, despite the fact that local government continues to be the most accessible to the citizenry. As public employees under these circumstances, we face the challenge of serving our community in a way that maintains the confidence and trust of citizens in the realm. I believe that we continue to do so, and with your help, the public standing of this organization remains extremely high. The city's mission statement reads, the city of Monroe is committed to providing the finest possible municipal service while preserving the city's unique sense of community and quality of life. Through your years of service and dedicated service to the city, you have demonstrated your commitment to these words. I believe I speak for the city council and the entire Monroe community when I offer you the city's gratitude for your contribution toward making this kind of community of which we can all be proud. With that, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Well, I too have something written out here, but written for a different reason because they don't want me to go off course and start telling stories or anything. Says, one of the greatest privileges of this job is the opportunity to recognize employees. Tonight, I'd like to recognize Sergeant Rick Dunn for 20 years of service to the Monroe Police Department. Began his career with the department in 1993 and quickly proved himself to be a leader rising through the ranks. In 2003, he assumed the role of CERT commander. This team was well-trained and committed to excellence in service. They were used in many situations such as high-risk warrants and barricaded subjects. Sergeant Dunn has always been active in the community. He organizes the local Red Robin Tip-A-Cop campaign, benefiting Special Olympics, and then also participate in fundraising for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society in celebration of his son, Callahan, the leukemia survivor. It's with great pride that I present Sergeant Dunn with his 20-year badge in recognition of his dedication, professionalism, and integrity in serving this department and the citizens in Monroe. We have this great fancy badge that you are certainly welcome to wear. It's different than the other badges because of your 20 years. So,
thank you very much.
As I said, feel welcome to wear that at any time. There's a Chief's coin. And lastly, I see members of your family here. Would you like to introduce them?
Yes, I'd like to have the family come up here. Get a picture with everything. So we got the whole 200 level. So, it's quite a feat to get everybody here. Rick's only going to be 4 man. That's awesome. He's awesome.
Congratulations. Well, continuing with recognizing those who serve in public safety, I also want to read a proclamation this evening recognizing our police and fire departments, and by proclaiming a week of appreciation for their service. And so if you allow me, I have a proclamation to read at this time. A proclamation, Police and Fire Appreciation. Whereas the Monroe Police Department and Fire Department personnel keep our community safe by increasing public awareness of methods for crime and fire prevention. and whereas these pavilions' first responders show their dedication by putting their lives on the line to protect and serve our community every time they go to work. And whereas our police officers and firefighters show genuine care for the safety of the citizens of Monroe, enduring whatever ordeal they face with courage and perseverance. And whereas hard work and commitment is the mission of public safety, the mottos of the police department and fire department are, the Monroe Police Department is dedicated to the pursuit of excellence in providing professional law enforcement services, and the Monroe Fire District number 3 is dedicated to protect life, property, and the environment through education, prevention, and emergency response to medical, fire, and hazardous materials. Maximum effort. We strive to accomplish this mission by maintaining operational readiness by providing a highly trained, physically fit workforce, by promoting safety in all endeavors, and providing all necessary resources to adequately protect those we serve. Therefore, I, Robert G. Zimmerman, do here issue this recognition as a true expression of appreciation and a symbol of gratitude for the exceptional quality of public service as you continue to dedicate yourselves to keeping our citizens and community safe. And therefore, I do proclaim the week of November 17th through the 23rd in 2013 as Police and Fire Appreciation Week in the City of Monroe, and I urge all citizens to join me in this special observance. Again, thank you to all who serve. Set aside a portion of our agenda for opportunity for comments from citizens. This is your opportunity as citizens to speak to City Council on any issues that they on the judicial matter subject to a public hearing. We'd ask that you limit your time to 5 minutes, and we'd also appreciate your name and address for the record. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address Council at this time? Motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved. Second.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Hanford to approve the consent agenda. With that, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. First item in unfinished business is an ordinance amending the Monroe Municipal Code to create a new class of utility customers. This will be a first and final reading. Please, Diane.
This is the ordinance that I spoke to you about at the last meeting, and I'm requesting the council waive the usual rules of reading an ordinance twice in order to get this passed tonight. If we adopt the ordinance tonight, then there will be no effect on the customer's utility account for the senior citizen home. Because the next billing cycle is the first week of November. Otherwise, they would be hit with the per unit charge rather than the commercial per meter charge. And if there's any questions at all, I think I kind of explained, you know, the situation of what was going on with this particular new class. We went through with the customer base, and there are only three customers that would be eligible for this customer class. And this is a temporary fix at the end of 2014, when the latter part of 2014, when we do the rate study, we will be reviewing all the customer classes and various rate structures to find the most equitable for all customers. And so, but in the meantime, because this account has been billed this way since 1998, it would be undue hardship for them to change at this time.
All right, thank you. Councilmember Hanford?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Diane, for your explanations and all your hard work on getting this figured out. And I definitely want to make a motion to waive council rules requiring a second reading of the ordinance.
Second.
All right, motion has been made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Camp, to waive the council rules requiring a second reading of the ordinance. Councilmember Gearing?
Not related to that. I actually had questions on it. So if we need to do that first, that's fine. Otherwise, I can wait.
Since there's a motion that's been made, if there's any questions or comments regarding the motion, we can have that now.
Thanks.
We'll take a vote on that motion, and seeing no lights for this motion, we'll take a vote at this time. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. And where's Diane? Oh, way over there. Sorry. You were here a second ago, now you're over there. Just wanted to make sure, unintended consequences of doing this. You know, think about it. Love what we're doing. Love what we're doing. And I'm assuming that Zach or someone has looked through this. It's not creating an issue. You said temporary. I thought I heard the word temporary. Okay. I didn't see temporary in here, so I was just...
Okay.
The specific intent is once the rate study that happens next year takes place, that this then is no longer in effect. I missed it. I didn't see that in here.
Right.
If that's the intent of it, I didn't see that as I was...
The wondering. First point is Zach Lell, the city attorney, is the one who wrote the ordinance. He did cross all the T's and dot all the I's to make sure that we weren't doing anything we should not be doing.
Right.
The part about the rate, I believe he has the word interim, where it says that they will be charged at the customer the commercial rate. However, yes, this ordinance as written is a permanent class the way it is written. The intent is to revisit all of our customer classes when we do the rate structure study. That is our intent. It's not written down anywhere. But it's at that time we would look at all our various classes and see if do we have the right class structures for our customers. Do we have, you know, what we should be doing? And so, but you're right. The way the ordinance is written, whatever council decides to adopt at that time in 2014, we would be repealing this old ordinance and all the existing rules at that time.
And I guess my only concern there is that there's nothing that really binds council next year to actually do that.
No, there isn't.
So calling it interim is just, I mean, we're kind of calling it interim. I think it's a great idea. I just from a crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's standpoint, if that's really the intent, should we include that somewhere either as a part of the official motion, or does that need to actually be included in the ordinance itself? I don't know if you know the answer to that. I just want to make sure that, you know, if that's really what we're going to do, we're going to be bound by that, then it probably should say that somewhere. I don't. Anyway, those are my... Otherwise, I'd certainly appreciate what we're attempting to do here. Thank you.
Councilor Cove.
Thank you. Diane, do you know if we have low-income senior housing at profit for places?
For profit? Yes.
Yes, in the community that you would classify as low-income, but they're at a profit for company.
Yeah.
Or owned by.
For example, Zach Bell's council's apartment building that's right next to the senior services building.
So that is
he doesn't have 100% low income senior, but he has a majority low income.
Okay, and they're charged the per unit rate.
Yes, they are.
Did we have any feedback on this ordinance or this direction that the city is going from those seniors that live in a profit for senior housing?
They pay a flat rent fee and do not pay the bill per se. The owner of the building pays the utility bills passes the charge on to their customer through their rent payment. So fluctuations in rent in utility, I don't know how much they will see.
In reading, I understand the need to do this, and my heart goes out to this group of seniors. Tell you the truth, it's a struggle for me to make a decision on this because it is creating a new class and treating seniors who live in nonprofit buildings different than seniors who live in a profit for, but both might be low income. And that's my struggle because this doesn't help those seniors who are in a profit for apartment building. So I will be voting for it tonight, but I did struggle with this decision because of that issue.
I'll vote for it tonight because it's interim and we're going to be doing a rate study, but, you know, I do have that slight issue with it. Thanks.
Thank you. And let the record show that Councilmember Gamble is now into the chambers and is present. Okay, Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. The rate study's next year. Is it scheduled already? Do we have everything in place to start it? What's the effort to get that ramped up and accomplish that?
I believe Brad is working on an RFP for consultants at this time, and he can probably speak better to that. In the November 19th council meeting, I am bringing an agenda item to the council asking for direction of whether or not you want to continue to keep it on track for the second half of 2014 or if you want to move that project up.
The other thing, just to go along with what Councilmember Gearing said, the unintended consequences. We've had three or four people now come before council about various issues with water rates. You know, I'm not going to be here within a couple months, but I'm concerned about this. And like Councilmember Cutterback, I'm voting in favor of it because it's a mistake that seems like we should have caught a long time ago. I'm just more concerned with the unintended consequences of, you know, now we have potentially three more people coming back and asking us to do the same thing, and this is something we're going to be involved in until we do that rate study. So I don't have the right answer. I don't necessarily know what the answer is, other than to make sure that we have the rate study more firmly scheduled, and then maybe that gets pushed up, and maybe even we adopt something else to say that we're not going to do anything else until that's approved. And again, that's council's decision, but that's my only concern about it. I think this is the right thing to do. I'm just concerned when the laundromat shows up or the other apartment complexes. You know, are we going to be doing this every week?
Well, hopefully at the November 19th council meeting, on the agenda item, when I ask for direction from council, we can have that discussion and we can firm up exactly when, you know, if we can make a, council can make a public declaration of when they want this rate study done. And that, I think, it brings it out in the public and it's a firm set of direction to staff. And so something that is public record that we will follow. So.
And just a suggestion, it might also be wise at that time to suggest we start taking feedback or input from citizens, but that we aren't going to react to anything else until we have a chance to comprehensively look at the problem and come up with a good solution. Because I know it takes up a lot of your time, and you know, I just don't want to see you doing this every week. So, thank you.
Councilor Hamburg.
Thank you. I appreciate those perspectives. I move to adopt ordinance number 017-2013, amending the Monroe Municipal Code to create a new class of utility customer.
Second.
Motion has been made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Pettibat, to adopt ordinance 017-2013, amending the Monroe Municipal Code to create a new class of utility customer. At this time, I'd like to have City Administrator Braswell read the official ordinance title.
City of Monroe, Ordinance Number 017-2013, an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, amending Chapter 13.04, MMC, Water Regulations, Rates and Charges, and Chapter 13.08, Sewer System Regulations, establishing new utility rate classifications for multifamily residences occupied by low-income senior citizens and owned or operated by nonprofit entities, providing for severability and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Thank you. Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. It would be my preference to see the word interim actually in the ordinance itself. But I don't know if that creates a legal issue. Perhaps that would require review at a six-month period of time, at least with other interim ordinances. There's at least a public hearing and a review. I think that's correct if something is interim. If we're going to be doing this anyway, that would allow for public discussion for review. I understand that it says that these are, these are just until the rate study. I don't know if officially calling this an interim ordinance, if it truly is an interim ordinance, if that's an issue, just adding that word, or if that actually legally makes things a little bit different. So I have that question before we vote, and I don't know if there's an answer to that.
City Administrator Brown.
I don't have the answer to that, I apologize. But in looking at the rates, that is a major undertaking, and you know, I don't know for sure that we will change the rates. And if that's the case, this may stay and not be an interim ordinance. That's the only caveat to doing an interim ordinance, that we don't know at this time whether it will be or not. We suspect it may be. But the way our rates are structured, it would totally flip the way the billing's done, meaning that single family or somebody else is going to take the hit because we have to purchase the water, obviously, provide water to the citizens. So just as long as council understands that, the same rate that we pay to Everett has to be paid somehow between the ratepayers. So this may or may not be an interim ordinance that isn't established for sure, but we're thinking it might be, but it's a big might.
So there's a chance that it won't be, in which case calling it in, all right. And that's why not calling it an interim ordinance covers that base, is this is what you're saying.
We could always come back and council could take action at a later time to, you know, take this ordinance out of law and put a new one in.
All right, thank you very much.
Any other questions or comments? All right, seeing the lights here, no comments, we'll take a vote on the motion at this time. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Okay, thank you very much. Moving on to the next item under unfinished business. This is a discussion on traffic calming program. Mr. Farmer.
Thank you. Maybe the second favorite subject after Edison's. We discussed this on August 20th last, when the City Council was presented with a proposed residential traffic guidelines, and the Council was interested at that time of just allowing homeowners associations, if they wish to install traffic calming devices at their expense, to allow them to do that. At that time, they mentioned that we should check with the city's insurance authority, Washington City's insurance authority, to get their view on that, and their letter is attached. In brief, it's don't do that. Have a set of criteria that the city sticks with. There's nothing that says that people can move up the list if they pay for their own improvements, but that's not the criteria for the installation. There has to be a citywide policy of when those things are warranted, which keeps the city out of liability situations for, you know, why did they get one in that situation when I have the same situation over here that we're not on any list anymore saying it's needed. So that's where that came out. So we're still looking for what to do with traffic calming devices. Preferable recommendation from my point of view is to proceed with that draft policy that I attached this time to, or if the council would like to discuss and change the thresholds or things like that, we can certainly look at that too. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Fred, I did have a question about is it clearly defined in the policy or the guidebook that the neighborhood pays for it? For whatever traffic?
No, that's not included right now. It's the same one that was last time, was that if you think there's a problem, bring it to the city, we do the necessary studies, say yes, it meets the criteria.
Then at that point,
that still has to be worked out. Is it just, we come to the city each time and say, this meets it, do you have any money, or we put a certain amount aside, or we add somewhere in there that says, these are on the list in priority order, and if the homeowners association wishes to pay for it, they can install it at that time.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see that in there. I saw it in their, in the description or in their letter, or that homeowners associations can pay for all of it or part of it.
That's not the reason why it's needed.
Separate. But so we that ties together though, because we have to have a clear method of who pays and how much the city pays or whatever. Because if it shows that it's needed, and then we decide not to do it because we don't have money, I see an issue with that. So that there needs to be a clarity in there on if it's needed, and the doc, you know, meets the criteria, then it's very clear on whether, you know, they pay half, we pay, very clear on that.
Correct.
Where that revenue stream comes from. And then even if they are to pay, it needs to be very clear on who maintains it, because I could see those needing maintenance, and I'm not sure what the cost of that. I saw, you know, speed humps might cost $6,000 for one.
Correct.
And I didn't know there were so many speed humps and split bumps and, I mean, all the different options. So I did learn a lot reading this, so thank you. But so I'm in favor of looking, you know, at the guidelines and developing that,
okay,
and being very clear on, and if there is a need, then where the funding comes from. And I also like the Monroe Traffic Advisory Committee. So did we used to have one? Is that what I read? That there,
yes,
used to be one, and then it just kind of...
2008.
Yeah, 1992 to 2008.
Correct.
And then did it just go away? There wasn't a need, or...?
Pretty much lack of interest.
Okay. Okay.
So
would that be tied together with this, or could it...
Yeah,
we don't have to have it, but we can...
The idea would be to get citizen involved in it and put on those kind of things. That, you know, the people who are really interested in this, they could volunteer for the committee and things like that.
Okay.
You know, if no one volunteers, it's not necessarily, everything doesn't come to a screeching halt if there isn't a committee.
Okay.
So
I like the idea of having citizen involvement as being part of the solution when there's problems. I like that aspect. And then, again, with the guidebook, if there's clear, you know, direction on who's responsible for payment and for maintenance once they're established, even if we didn't pay them. Because I could see a liability issue if there's damaged bumps out there and the city isn't taking care of them. We're already not funding our roads for potholes and such. So, you know, that came up last week. Those are my initial comments. Thanks, Brad.
Thank you, Councilman.
Thank you, I agree with Councilmember Kodak. Proceed on.
Okay.
A couple of questions for probably the chief. In some of the different options that they talk about, having the portable radar trailer you park out there and let people see how fast they're going, with some of the complaints about the speeds and things like that, like, how does that work? Does that just get dispatched per, you know, there's so many calls for this street, so they would go drop that off because there's a high demand for it?
Someone makes a request for, or we have people calling in complaining that there's a continuous problem there, and then we'll go set it up. And it has an effect, but it's a short-lived effect, usually.
Okay. And then the second question is, at current staffing levels, how practical is it for, say, everyone on Cedar Street is calling in saying, there's speeders, can you help us, there's speeders. How practical is it for officers to camp out there with the radar gun and monitor that on occasion? I mean, obviously not 24/7, but
we do not have a traffic unit at this time. So in order for an officer to be in that location to work radar or speed, it is a priority until a higher priority occurs, such as a burglary response or something that other than a traffic situation, which would be listed as a higher priority.
Sure. So is that something down the road that you're hoping for, traffic to have officers, or?
Yes. Is that, did you want to know when? Before the end of the year. I will bring something forward to you.
Okay. Those are questions I'm getting asked.
Sure.
And so it helps me to, thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Hanford. Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. Brad, looking through the charts here with the X's and the different columns, the sign and pledge prayer, and things like that. I know there's good intention behind education, encouragement, and a lot of flyers and stuff like that, and people just kind of, the people who aren't going to pay attention aren't going to pay attention anyway. And so ultimately what this boils down to be, for me, is safety. We have, you know, if we have a neighborhood that wants to do it, what I want to ultimately make sure is that if they want to pay for it themselves, whether or not it meets, you know, if it doesn't meet our threshold for us to pay for it, I want to make sure that they can still do that if they want, as long as it meets the standards that we're talking about. If it's created in the correct way, it's the right, meets those kind of standards. That's ultimately what I would like to see, is different communities within our town have the opportunity to do this if they want to, if it meets our standards, if it's below the threshold. I think that's essentially what the ask was, is, you know, there's that whole, you can't fight City Hall type of thing, all right, so let's, you know, what can we do to be more flexible in this particular area for concerned community? Not every community may want it. Some might be desperate for it. And yet every single thing that they wanted on that map probably, you know, maybe not realistic. But some of them certainly could be. I mean, it was a compelling argument. Now, some of the numbers that you shared didn't, you know, it didn't add up in some of the cases. But it, like you said before, it's those exceptions that are the issue. It's the person driving 50 and the 25 that makes the average just go up a little bit, but those are the people that, you know, those are the people that we have the issue with. So, sign and pledge part. I mean, do we know how well those things? I mean, you know, you have people in the community moving the signs around, and that's kind of what it is, right? So, maybe just to work. Do we know how effective that has been in other cities? Is that? Yeah, there's probably a good first step. At best, it's a best practice.
It's a best practice, pretty much. There's not a lot of documentation on the edge, since it's fairly new.
Okay.
So there haven't been a lot of studies on that one.
Okay. Personally, I love the radar trailer. I'd love to see a bunch of those around, because, you know, it's not. Now, of course, there are those people that like to see how high they can get that to go. But, you know, ultimately, I think that's a very, I love the visual deterrent myself. Those kind of things. All right. I guess what I want to say ultimately is that I want to make sure that what is not lost in this, you know, as I read through where each one of these, you know, raised all the X's for each of the categories, that if there is a homeowners association that wants to take action in their neighborhood, they still have the option to do that if they say they raise the money to do it themselves. If it doesn't meet our number standpoint, I wouldn't want that opportunity to be lost for them. So I would hope that if we were to adopt this and continue moving forward in this, that is not lost.
Well, that's contrary to what WCAA says that we should do.
We would still have a standard.
That standard of shape, a standard of where they should be placed and what is the criteria for the need for them.
All right.
Is that's what came back from WCAA.
All right, I'm done for now. Thanks.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. Yeah, I was just going to say I slightly disagree with what Councilmember Gearing said. I'm fine with having the standard. To me, the biggest issue is that we have not only the standards for speed, but also the style and all of that. So we don't get somebody coming in and saying, for $50, I can pour a blob of concrete on the street and I can do it myself. You know, I like that approach. I'm not in favor of having different tests. You know, if somebody wants to pay for it, then there's no threshold. I think that gets really confusing. But I do like the ability for them to say, you know, I think there's a problem. We'll fund the traffic study. We'll fund the creation of this if it's deemed necessary. But we want to get it pushed up so that if we don't have budget money set aside, which we currently do not, then we still have a mechanism to move forward. That's all I'm concerned with. And I'm not as concerned about all of the other, what I consider fluff, the brochures and all that. I mean, I don't know too many people that can't figure out a speed bump, haven't met too many of those. So I think that that's kind of obvious. And so I'd rather see more of solving the problem and not doing all the touchy-feely stuff. So I agree.
That's one of the things about borrowed heavily from the city of Bellevue, is that Bellevue allows you to go directly to the speed hump or whatever it is, as opposed to like the city of Kirkland's program, you have to try the more touchy-feely stuff for 2 years before you get to go to the speed hump.
Yeah, no, I like that
yeah.
better.
So that's why I picked that one. I figured you guys would get there.
All right, thank you.
All right, any other questions or directions for Brad in regards to this item? All right, seeing no lights here, no comments. We'll move on to the next item on the agenda this evening. It is Review 2013 Comprehensive Plan. And the recommended action this evening is review and discussion. Mr. Balfour, you're up.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to give you just a brief overview of the East Monroe comp plan amendment. I'll get this started here. This is the first of three comp plan amendments we're bringing forth to you over the next few weeks. We're getting close into the final stages of this whole process. East Monroe text amendments for about three chapters of the comp plan and school mitigation fees from this past fall. But I'd like to give you just an overview of this one. And the next couple of weeks we'll be talking about the other two, and then we'll bring them all together at your first meeting in December. The Planning Commission is on kind of a parallel track with these as well. This project, last week we talked about the final EIS. I have a couple of words about schedule. As expected, we did get an appeal this past Friday on the final EIS from the two of the neighbors on the hill. They're contesting, I think, 12 points in the EIS and declaring it as inadequate. And so now we're in the process of preparing responses and so forth. And there is a public hearing scheduled at this point with the hearing examiner on November 7th. And if you recall from last week, if we hold to that public hearing date, that puts the appeal process for the EIS complete first week of December. We're scheduled for action by council on the 10th and 17th of December. The other change, just to FYI, we had scheduled a public hearing with the Planning Commission for all of these amendments on November 11th. And that being a holiday, we're having some issues with calendar time, but we've moved that to November 18th rather than November 11th. We're actually holding some extra meetings with the commission to work through these and get a recommendation to you. But I think the general conclusion was that it's best not to hold it on a holiday, and city staff won't have to come to work that night. So that could be a good thing, too. So, on East Monroe, we call it, you know, from limited open space to general commercial. We talked about the final EIS. We are in the Commerce Department period of review right now. That'll be finished up early in December. The property, I'm sure we all know this, but is this area here, these five parcels. Does not include this parcel here from last year, nor has it ever included the Far East piece, to change that to general commercial. A couple of other slides. The FEIS really summarized or addressed a number of different on-site and off-site impacts. The on-site really dealt with these in terms of the critical areas, the slopes to the north along here, and flooding. There are lots of issues about flooding on this property. This map shows the critical areas, the stream and slough through here, wetlands all through here, the slopes and so forth. And when you subtract that, and this is an exercise in the EIS, this is what you end up with. On this scenario, this kind of alternative, accounting for critical areas and using areas for compensatory storage for flood water. It leaves about 11 acres of buildable area between these two parcels. So this one is right about 11 acres out of a total of 43 acres. This shows that just a little bit more, a little simpler, but again, this parcel and this more isolated piece up in here, a total of 11.33 acres that is actually buildable under this scenario. In reality, for a project, a development project, which would trigger a supplementary EIS, another more detailed exercise that has real facts and figures, because we know exactly what would be built. Where am I going with this? That area could be larger, or it could be smaller. It just depends on how the proposal's put together. Now let's talk about offsite impacts, and really all of these have been discussed and talked about in the past, over the past couple of years, but they're recurring issues, and not just the on-site, but the off-site, the whole issue about access and traffic impacts to Highway 2. And the EIS also addressed, in a large part, the potential issues with aesthetics, noise, light, that sort of thing. Utilities are available. They're about a mile away, but they are available. The first week of December, after we introduced these three amendments to you, the plan is to bring them all together at your first meeting in December to think about in terms of cumulative impacts, just to consider them all together. That's a part of this exercise mandated by the state. It's also a logical step in considering not just one, but all. How do they relate or not relate, as the case may be. Just a quick word about the DOT. The DOT's direction all along has been that there would be a roundabout at this point where the future bypass meets Highway 2. And in terms of access to this property, the access would be located about here. It's likely to be a roundabout. But if you look at this point right here, coming into the property is right here. And coming into the property, they're showing a frontage road stub to access the East Monroe property here. This point, in DOT's latest comments, basically they're saying that it's likely to be a roundabout for any significant level of development. It's doubtful that there would be enough reason or means to change it from that concept, so it could well be a roundabout. That's the end. That's what I have for a quick overview. I think you're all pretty familiar with this project, but I'd be happy to take any questions or try and answer questions. Your pleasure. Mayor?
Councilman Pettibay.
Just a question about the schedule again with the final EIS. It got appealed on the 18th. That was the deadline.
Right.
I think I heard you say we'll get heard on November 7th? Or is that the public?
The appellants requested a pre-hearing conference.
Okay.
Which we're having next week.
Okay.
And the public hearing before the hearing examiner is scheduled at November 7th.
Okay. And then the first week of December, did I hear that correct, that the hearing examiner would have a ruling?
Right. In a nutshell, the hearing examiner will conduct the hearing, render a decision, then there is a 10-day reconsideration period after that. Either the appellant or the city can say, we'd like you to reconsider your opinion. When that expires, I believe it's December 5th on the current schedule. And at that point, there is There is no further appeal until after council takes final action on the comp plan amendment. The any appeal of the EIS has to be coupled with that comp plan amendment and taken to the Growth Management Hearings Board. That's a 60-day period that starts up after the ordinance is approved. So it pushes it out to late February for a final expiration of that appeal period.
And so the appeal process, because previously when we had the phased EIS, Brad was at that appeal, at that hearing, and at this one, my assumption would be legal counsel from the city?
Yes.
Okay, so we're expending funds. It's our final EIS now, so we're expending funds having our counsel defend this.
Right. We are the owner, so to speak, of this EIS as the responsible SEPA agency. And it's really the onus of the city to respond to this appeal.
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
Any questions or comments from Paul?
Okay. We'll be back number 12th with text amendments. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks. On the agenda this evening is the presentation of the utility funds, the CIP funds budget. Diane is going to lead us through that. She needs the
This is the second budget presentation. Tonight we're going to talk about capital improvement project funds and utility funds. Last week we talked about the operating funds. This is more the big dollar projects that we'll be talking about tonight. The funds we're going to cover tonight are the governmental CIP funds, which are all those listed on the left. There's the General Park Street, North Kelsey, and then the debt fund. And then there's all the utility funds. Each utility has an operating fund and a CIP fund, except for the solid waste fund. And then we also have the debt reserve fund for the bonded debt for the utilities. The general CIP fund, this is for all big projects of a general nature for the city. Such things as the municipal campus would be a general CIP project. And it's really any project that does not fall in the other CIP funds, such as Park Street or utility. If it's none of those, then it goes into this fund. We don't have any appropriations for 2014 in the preliminary budget. Just sitting on it right now, the ending balance is projected to be $437,000, and we're just going to let that sit because we know projects are coming out probably in the municipal campus, and that money will get gobbled up right away in that. Helps if I go in the right direction. The Park CIP Fund for the 2014 budget, it has a few projects. The Lake Tide Park Building Upgrade, $180,000. Now, in the preliminary budget that was presented to you, that line item was at $100,000, but in the meantime, we've gotten estimates, and we had to upgrade it to $180,000, so I wanted you to be aware that is a difference from that will be in the final budget, unless I hear otherwise from council, that is different from the preliminary budget. We know now that project's going to be a little bit more. It's $180,000. Skate park improvements, $240,000. The Cadman Pit Master Plan, $40,000. And then the Parks Master Plan update of $45,000. Restricted for paths and trails, and that's a state restriction for gas tax. we have to put a 0.0042% of our gas tax in, is restricted to be used on paths and trails, and we have $26,000 sitting in there right now for it. And we will eventually use it on a project. We have like over 10 years to use it on a path and trail project. Each year we put in probably about $2,500 to that restricted balance. The ending, and I know Brad's got his eye on it because he was asking me about it the other day. The ending fund balance in that fund after all those expenditures will be $348,000.
Councilman Kitabek.
Thank you. Diane, the skate park improvements of 240, does that include when we had the presentation with that redesign of the, or is this just...
Yes, exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
I just want to make sure. What was that called? It was Urban Field Tour, but it had a name.
Kind of like a city plaza type.
Yeah, it had some kind of a name of it. But so that's the 240 would cover
That would include the engineering work and the design and construction.
Okay. What's the timeline? So this would be 2014 budget?
Yeah, so we're putting those in, and we would initiate right away with the design work and then move to the construction. So the construction, we'd have to see as far as whether we can keep it in 2014 or if we need to carry over the construction in 2015. But we want to move, and that's the first step.
That's exciting.
To get this going.
Okay, great. Thanks, Diane.
Okay. The street CIP fund. A lot of big projects going on here. We're estimating grant revenues of $1.6 million. That's a lot in grants. GMA fees of $877,000. Some private contributions of $116,000. And interfund transfers from the, mostly from the Transportation Concurrency Fund of $1.5 million. The capital construction projects appropriated out of this fund for 2014 total $2.9 million. And on the next slide, I'll list them and so you'll know what that money's going towards. There also is a restricted fund balance of $880,000 in this fund for the North Kelsey Roundabout. We're reserving that money for future use. And after all of those expenditures, the ending fund balance will be $497,000. The projects are listed here. As you can see, very ambitious. Brad's going to be really busy. I'm not going to sit there and read you the slide, but as you can see, probably, you know, East Fremont reconstruction's a biggie, Tierney Place, West Main Sidewalk. There's a lot of projects there. If you have any questions on any of them, I'll need to defer to Brad because I'm just the numbers person.
All right, Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. Brad, maybe this is for you, but of these projects that are listed, can you just give us an idea of which ones are to complete the projects versus which ones are, you know, planning or, you know, various stages of the projects?
Transportation plan, we'll finish the transportation plan. East Fremont reconstruction is the end of it. Elizabeth Sidewalk would be the end of it. If we get the grant, Franklin's paving would be the end of it. Gateway Roundabout's just the start. Kelsey Chain Lake Roundabout is the start.
Main the start meaning like the design?
That's the start of the design, yes.
Okay. So no actual
construction on that. Main Street paving, if we get the grant, would be complete. Tierney Place would just be design work. High Signal will be design work. West Main Street sidewalk is complete if we get the grant. And Woods Creek paving is complete if we get the grant.
Okay, so about half an hour.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Councilor Kitabek.
Thank you. Brad, what is the Gateway Roundabout? Is that coming off 522?
No, that's the downtown Gateway Roundabout that was in the downtown master plan. That's at the intersection of Madison, Fremont, and Main.
Okay. And that was in the downtown master plan?
The downtown master plan, yes.
Okay. It's not on our transportation plan as a top project, but...
Right, it's in the downtown plan.
Okay. I don't remember seeing it now. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. North Kelsey Development Fund. It is receiving a transfer from the general fund of $850,000. It will transfer $60,000 to the debt fund to pay interest on the GO bonds. There's a capital project to fill in the drainage pond for $676,000 in order so we can sell that as buildable land. And then after all those expenditures, there will be, it's anticipated an ending fund balance in this fund of $216,000. The debt fund for North Kelsey, we're paying close to $60,000 in interest in 2014. The remaining principal, because, oh, I'm so excited, November 1st, we're calling $7.3 million in bonds on this, and so that'll be off the books. Really exciting. So that'll leave us with $4 million left to pay on the bonds. The principal payment is due November 1st of 2015. That means we need to sell the land to pay this in 2014, because it takes about a year to close these commercial deals. So I'm really keeping my fingers crossed that we don't have to roll over this debt, because I have a feeling if we do, we're going to be paying really high interest rates and fees, because we've been saying for over 10 years now, we're going to sell the land to pay off the debt. And so the creditors now are going to be saying, yeah, we've been hearing this for a long time. And so I'm really hoping we can sell the land in 2014 to pay off the debt in 2015. Got my fingers crossed.
I do want to note that in the last 3 years, we've sold $7 million worth.
Exactly.
I hope they take that into consideration.
Yeah, that does show that we are on the right track, yes. Okay, the utility funds. These funds are different than governmental funds in that they're not supported by taxes. These are funded by rates, what we charge our customers and developers. They, by law and definition, they have to be self-supporting. They cannot be subsidized by the general fund. The bond covenants for the revenue debt, revenue bonds that we have outstanding on the utilities require a 1.25 ratio of revenues to operating expenses. Operating expenses are your expenses, not counting interfund transfers or debt payments. Now, the way our bonds are structured, it's as a combined utility, which means when we do this bond covenant test, we combine all the utilities together, water, sewer, and storm together, and do the test. And they meet it that way. If you separate the utilities and did it individually by water, sewer, and storm, only sewer meets the test. Storm and water do not. But legally, we're okay with that. The water fund. Operating revenues are expected to be $3.8 million. Operating expenses are $3.1 million. Total expenditures are $4 million. And I'll tell you what the difference is. We also have the what's not operating expenses that bumps it up to the $4 million is we're doing a $280,000 transfer to the CIP fund for capital projects. And what was the other thing? Oh, and debt service payments. We have debt payments of $631,000 coming out of this fund. There is in the 2014 budget, there is a proposed rate increase of 4% to the water rates, and that's to cover the increase from Everett. Everett's bumping it up 9.5%, I believe it was, the price that we purchased the water. As you know, the Kimberly-Clark plant closed, and that hit Everett really hard. So what they did is they turned to all their purveyors and bumped it to all of us. We're all absorbing that hit. And so they bumped all of our rates up. A while back, I had gone to a meeting, and they were showing how they distribute the increases to the different groups, and they group us all in different groups. And the group that they have Monroe in, we're in with a group that uses a lot more water than we do individually. And I remember at the time pointing out that it was really inequitable. Monroe was getting disproportionately hit hard, and their response was, yeah, we realized when we looked at that that it's not fair to you guys. And so they have a board. They're looking at the new way of doing it, and thank goodness Jake is on that board so that Monroe will have a say at the table. And they're going to relook at the way they do it. But in the meantime, they're hitting us with a 9.5% increase in the amount we pay for water. So that translates to a 4% increase to our customers. And there's really nothing we can do about it because we don't have any underground wells. We are good maintaining our restricted fund balance of $400,000 per the reserve policy, and that's a good thing. This particular fund, if you were to do that bond ratio, 1.25 ratio, it's short $171,000 to meet the ratio by itself. And so that's not too bad when you consider it's a $3.8 million operation.
Thank you. Just for planning purposes and communication-wise, if we're going to be increasing the rates, as we, the city, communicate with citizens, you know, whichever bill, you know, a notice that would go out saying, hey, they're going up, be really wise to give a big explanation like you just gave us.
Okay.
I think,
I'm going to send out a letter, but yeah, I'll put in the background story.
Yeah, just so there's clear communication to all citizens so they know exactly why things have to go up.
Yeah, that this is not something we are doing to them, that it's something that's being done to us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilmember Geary.
Thank you. Diane, I see it's a 4% increase to cover a 9% increase.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, I know there's Everdad's jacked up the rates, you know, before.
Yeah.
I remember a 7% increase where we just essentially passed that along because we couldn't subsidize it. Are we actually subsidizing part of this cost? So we're not subsidizing.
No.
Like we were 7% lower, where it went up 7% because ours went up 7%.
Yeah.
So that got spread around.
The
how's that not up?
The amount that we collect from the customers pays for more than just the water itself. Pays for meter reading, pipes, replacement, all those kind of sort of things. So basically what I did was I took the anticipated how much we sold this year, up it a little bit for increased consumption, multiplied it times the 9% increase, and said that's how much more money we needed to collect, which translated to a 4% rate increase, actually a 3.78%.
Just to keep it even, right.
Which doesn't, also, we're not actually collecting anything for future line replacements either with that, so.
Well, I do appreciate that I've explained many times in the past to folks that we get our water from that rate, we don't, I mean, there's a cost to doing business as a city, we can't afford to subsidize stuff. So the 9 and the 4 was a little too, so I do appreciate that explanation.
And just
that is essentially just it's a pass-through,
right.
Because we can't subsidize it.
And just so you are aware that Everett is planning on raising, in the next 3 years, is planning on raising water rates 30% as it currently stands.
And to Councilmember Hanover's point, it's important to make sure that is communicated. It's not just the city checking rates. This is what we're charged, you know. And that's not something we can afford to subsidize.
I'll make a point to emphasize that.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Councilmember Williams.
That's 4% is just the water portion of the bill that's going up. I'm sure talk about other ones, but that's just the water portion of the total bill. Okay.
Yes. Okay, the water capital fund. We're expecting capital revenues, capital fees of $576,000. Again, this fund is getting a transfer from operations of $280,000. Because a portion of the rates does go towards some capital expense. Capital construction projects are appropriated at $848,000, and that consists of the 132nd Water Street water main replacement, miscellaneous water main replacements. We've had a bunch of water main breaks, as you're aware of. And so our infrastructure is old, it's failing, we've got to replace it. And then the Sky Meadow intertie of $78,000. After all the expenditures, there's the restricted fund balance per the reserve policy of $274,000 plus an ending fund balance of $4 million for future capital projects to help our aging infrastructure.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. Brent, you said a while ago that the increases and even in the cover replacing water lines and stuff like that. And I see we have some of those listed on here, but we still have a $4 million balance. Is there a reason why we aren't doing more of that, or is it just not necessary this time? Or
it's necessary, but right now with the grant funding, we're taking, I think, advantage of the grant opportunities in streets. So most of our resources are going towards street projects.
Okay.
Next year.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we just don't have enough people. Okay, sewer fund. Revenues are anticipated to be $6.3 million. Operating expenses, $3.2 million. Total expenses, $7.1 million. And that includes debt service payments of $1.8 million, which is a lot. And we are also transferring $2 million from operating to the CIP fund. There is an anticipated rate increase in the preliminary budget of 14%, and that's per a resolution that was adopted in 2011 to cover costs of the wastewater treatment improvements. When we went to issue those $15 million of bonds, council did a resolution saying that for 3 years we would increase the sewer rate by 14% each year to make up for past years where we did not increase rates, and also this would guarantee the ability to pay off the $15 million in bonds. And so that's why there's high debt and high rate increases. I believe there's one more year, or is this the last year? No, there's one more year of rate increase with this utility, and then we will not be increasing for a while. We are meeting the reserve policy of $375,000 in restricted reserve, and in addition, an ending fund balance of $164,000.
Councilor Williams? Darian, just clarification.
Yeah.
The 14% interest, when you say one more year, are you referring to 2014, or are you also referring to 2015? Because I thought this was effective 2012. It was the first year.
2013.
That's my recollection as well. This should be the last year.
Yeah, maybe it's last year. Okay, I got to double check, but yeah.
Okay, and then at that point, there's no mechanism to reduce rates. There's just nothing to increase them in going into 2015.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
The CIP fund for sewer. Capital revenues are anticipated to be $900,000. We're transferring $2 million from operations to capital. Capital construction projects appropriated for 2014 are $1 million, and they are listed there. The big Blakely storm separation, Lewis storm separation, Taft storm separation, and the wastewater treatment plant phase three. The restricted fund balance for emergencies per the reserve policy is $447,000. And in addition to that, there's a $5 million ending fund balance for future capital projects. The Stormwater Fund. Revenues for the Stormwater Fund are anticipated to be $1.5 million. Expenses, $1.3 million. Debt service payment of $104,000. And let me see. And there is a $400,000 transfer to the Storm CIP Fund. No rate increases anticipated for 2013. So I'm glad to say that about at least one of the utilities. And we are meeting the restricted fund balance for the per the reserve policy, and then have an additional ending fund balance of $98,000. The Storm CIP fund has the $400,000 coming from operations. Construction projects are appropriated at $1.3 million. The Blakely, Lewis, and East Fremont storm projects meets the $52,000 for a restricted fund balance per the policy, and in addition to that, an ending fund balance of $1.3 million for future projects. Solid waste. No rate increases for 2013. There was a 3%. September 1st is when public services hits us with their annual increase every year, and it was 3% again this last year. We did not passed this on to the customers. We absorbed it through fund balance and just cutting corners. And we are continuing with the cleanup, spring cleanup event that's in the budget. And yeah, just we're planning on whatever rate they increase. They'll probably hit us with another 3% in 2014, and we're just going to absorb it. We have enough ending fund balance, $678,000 there, that we can absorb it. So why, you know, charge more if you don't have to?
Councilman Keane.
Thank you. Diane, excuse me.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned a couple times we're going to be absorbing these. Is there a point where we'll no longer be able to absorb them?
Yeah.
And that will be?
Probably in another year or two. Well, probably... 2015 will be the last year, probably, that
okay,
we can
absorb. 2016 is probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But by then, we will not be having the sewer increases in the sewer rate. You know, the sewer utility shouldn't be having any more increases.
Okay.
So, okay. Hopefully, when one stops, you know, when one picks up, another one stops. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Diane, that's 2014, you need no rate increases.
Correct. Yes.
Councilor Pian.
And the contract's up to 2017, is that what we?
Yeah.
It's a 9-year contract with 2 extensions.
7 years.
Oh, 7 years. Okay.
7 years. 7 years.
What did you guys do?
Yeah,
it was
2017.
Yeah. It's 2017.
Yeah.
Councilman Williams.
Thank you. Daniel, just a question. What are the regulations around how much money we need to keep in the CIP fund balances? Is there part of the regulations that are tied to our debt there?
We have a debt reserve fund for that, which is the next slide. But as far as just ending fund balance, we have the capital plan that tells how much we should be putting aside for future projects as the infrastructure fails. You know, you want to be able to replace it or expand. And so basically in the capital funds, those ending fund balances are for that. They go along the lines of what your future capital needs will be.
Correct. So we won't have to borrow potentially. But it looks like those 3 CIP funds, we're going to leave $10.5 million roughly.
Yes.
In them. And all that money is for potential future capital projects that would mean we won't have to go out and potentially borrow.
Yes.
To do those.
Yes.
Thank you.
And then there's the Revenue Bond Reserve Fund. And those are required to be set aside for the bond covenant. And there's a 3-part test to determine it. And currently, you take the lowest of these 3 tests that you do, financial tests that you do, and it's $1.9 million is what our requirement is. And so we are transferring $35,000 back to the utilities due to the reduction in the requirement. As we slowly pay off principal, this amount will slowly diminish. And so last year, in 2013, we transferred $100,000 back. 2014, we'll be transferring $35,000 back. It just depends on the ebb and flow of when principal balances come due with the bonded debt. And trying to think if there's anything else, but yeah, that money just sits there, required by law. So the next steps are we're going to have 2 public hearings on the budget for the public to say whatever they like. And then we'll have 2 readings on the budget ordinance. So what I'd like from council is, do you need any more information? Do you want to schedule any discussions? Do you feel pretty good about it, the budget? Or it's, you know, kind of a business as usual. There's nothing really radical in this budget. The only big differences are the new municipal court, which is being funded with police funds. There's, you know, we're adding a total of 5 FTEs to the city, and everything else is, there's the water rate increase and the sewer rate increase. Those are the only real negatives I can think of. If there's anything that you're not feeling comfortable about or you want more information on, or I would hate for, you know, the ordinance to come up and for you to feel like, you know, I don't know what I'm approving here. Let me know if you need more information or would like to schedule more discussion at council meetings. But if I don't hear anything, that's the schedule that we've got, is the two public hearings in November and then the two readings of the ordinance in December.
Councilmember Pettit.
Thank you. Diane, what might be helpful for me as I get questions out in the community is maybe just a one-page document that has, I mean, these are all separated. You have the general, and we had that last week, mm-hmm. and then the capital. But just with the major, you know, bullets, just bullet. Five FTEs is pretty substantial for a city that's cut back over the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. So just having a bullet, we're hiring five FTEs. These are the departments are in, the positions, you know, and then under that, municipal court, this is how much it costs. This is what the revenue is going to be. Just bullets on the major changes, because I think there are questions out there. I've heard questions about the municipal court.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to be lengthy, but just a bullet, you know, one-page document that incorporates all the changes. And then I guess I would like council to consider a little bit of discussion on the street maintenance funds that we heard about last week in the general fund. Right now, currently, we're not funding the street maintenance fund. And what I heard last week was that will be depleted at the end of next year. That's what fixes potholes and all that stuff. So, you know, I would like maybe a little bit of discussion on, is there a way that we could start funding that next year in 2014 so it's not depleted? I know there was mention of using REIT funds. Someone did show me that it is allowed under REIT too. They're under the RCW. You know, there's pros and cons to that, obviously. But I don't know if council would be willing to at least entertain that discussion of how can we fund maintenance of the street so we don't deplete that fund.
I agree.
So I don't know if you have thought of any options or if the staff have any options on what we could move around.
Staff, we talked about regrouping after the first of the year and doing some in-depth analysis of different options and then bringing them to council off the top of our heads.
But no thought on how to possibly write something into the budget to start
for this budget?
Yes, for this budget for 2014.
Our idea was that we are funded through 2014, so in the first half of 2014 we would find a way to, you know, fix it structurally so it would be ongoing work.
So I would like to look at it a little bit and see if there are any other options. I know the staff were looking at waiting until 2014 to look at that. I think it's worth spending a couple weeks and possibly looking at that. I would hate to see, it's one of the most important things government does is to fix the streets and maintain the streets. It's a priority for government. And we know it's not funded for 2014. We've made choices with funding other things. So I think it's worthy of at least spending a discussion at council meeting to go, is this a priority or not, and giving it some thought.
Would you look for a question?
Yeah.
You just said it wasn't funded for 2014. Did you mean 2015?
No, well, from what I understand, we have funding through 2014, but it's not currently funded. It'll run out at the end of next year's budget.
There's no budgeting for it.
There's been no budgeting for it. Gotcha. So what's in there will be used next year, and then it's gone.
Right. I thought that's what you said, but I want to make sure.
And as we're making choices, and it appears we might have some options to at least consider that and look at it.
With the 2014 budget, your options are basically use the street fund balance or use the general fund balance or make cuts to the general fund. So is that what you're asking for? You're asking for cuts to the general fund?
Or? Well, first off, I don't even know how much is needed in the street fund as far as what is kind of needed every year to maintain that and keep a good level of service for our streets.
In the last PowerPoint, it showed fully funded, it's greater than $1 million a year. But in realistic, you know, stripped down terms, you're looking at between $250,000 and $500,000 a year that it would need. So are you asking us to come back with cuts or to just take the money out of the general fund balance instead of the street fund balance?
Well, are there, it sounds like there might be a couple options you just mentioned, and looking at the possibilities, and maybe it's not even funding it the full 250. Is there any way that funding it $100,000 out of next year's budget if we make a couple adjustments?
You know, you mean like cuts?
Could be cuts. I'm not sure. It would be up for staff to take a look and make a couple recommendations. I can take a look and bring those back to council if council is willing to at least look at funding the street fund or the maintenance.
Administrator Breslin.
Thank you, Mayor. This has been an ongoing discussion that's kind of been avoided for a long time now. Prior Administrator Jim Southworth brought this to council. Some of you might remember that conversation. And there's not a lot of funding mechanisms. So what we chose to do is cut the department down to basically nothing. At that point in time, the discussion was property tax increase and use the minimal amount that the city's allowed to utilize. And I know that we've chose not to do that. And that's why staff has shown how that continues to grow as far as the lack of income that can be used for streets or anything. So anyway, we did have a discussion after the comments last week, and that is one option. I know that we didn't bring an ordinance forward to use the 1% increase that we're able to do, but that is around $20,000, a little less, that could be allocated to streets to at least get the ball rolling. Obviously, you know, the discussion is not to raise property tax, but sooner or later, that has got to be looked at, because you cannot continue to not raise taxes when cost of living and cost of maintenance and all those things continue to go up. So it is a big discussion, just so everybody understands.
That's right, Gary.
Thanks. Diane, per your suggestion, you had said that staff, something the staff would look at it early next year. Would, let's say some money was found with a budget amendment. Could a budget amendment be made to the 2014 budget in 2014?
At any time you can
put some money in for that.
Yeah.
I think that would be my preference to do that if you've already planned for staff. I think Councilor Cutterback has a good point. We don't want this. We need to think about it sooner than later. It sounds as though you guys have given some thought to how to do that, and if it's possible to accomplish what she's hoping to accomplish, you know, through a budget amendment still for 2014, and find that money, and then do that, and do a budget amendment for 2014, then I certainly think that sounds like an efficient way to do that, rather than, again, it's important, but if you've already got a plan for it, then I certainly think that would be worthy of following that plan. So, but again, to comment, she goes, yeah, it's not good to let that completely run out. So, thank you.
That's right, Gavin.
The plan is to look at it the first quarter next year. But what I heard was that if we could look at it now, there's two options, streets funds or general fund. So if we're going to look at it in the first quarter of next year, what's different?
We would be looking at different funding structures, one of them being a property tax increase. See if council would be amenable to that going forward, to start doing the 1%, putting that towards streets. There are some other things that we were going to look at, the different structural changes, like figuring out as the sales tax increase, what percentage could we divert to, you know, as the years, you know, the economy recovers, what percentage of sales tax could we divert towards, you know, to do some calculations and figure out what we could divert towards streets out of our sales tax. There's those two revenue streams we can see increasing, and, you know, use those increases towards streets. Another thing would be maybe to look at the TBD again, and look at the financing structure of that, you know, at least have the conversation. I know council's does not want any increases to that unless it's voted, so maybe go to the voters to do some increases for that. You know, there's just a bunch of different discussions of things that, you know, we want to look at and crunch the numbers and see, you know, really think it through. What are the pros and cons of each thing? You know, do an in-depth analysis.
Yeah, I guess Councilmember Cutterback brings up quite a few good points. You know, I guess what I would be interested in, I do feel a little leery going into the 2014 budget year where we're going to be at a zero, you know, end fund balance, and we're going to be just planning. So you get to the end of the year, and I get that you can do it anywhere in the process, but we don't all know how that can get. I guess I would feel more comfortable if we did take a look, and if it is, you know, looking at the street fund or the general fund, but at least maybe setting our budgeting the first quarter worth of expenses in 2015, so that we still do the due diligence on planning on the, you know, on the project. Okay, we're going to look at a bunch of different things, but we're not up against a end of year, you know, budget cycle where we're going to go into 2015 and there's absolutely nothing. You know, nothing there. I mean, if one of the solutions was putting it before a vote, well, if we put all the eggs in the vote, you know, basket, and it comes to the general election or whatever, it finally makes it, and the answer is no. Now you're sitting at November, you know, 5th or 11th, and we don't have an answer, you know, to the problem. So I just think it would be prudent for us to at least take a look at how could we at least fund the first quarter of expenses in 2015. Set something aside. Just thought.
Okay.
I think that there are some definite opinions on how this should be done, it sounds, from council, and so I think that staff would be most appreciative if they had direction as to what to bring back rather than guess what council might want to see. In this discussion, and let's also just be mindful of the fact that this isn't something new. You know, this isn't something that snuck up on us without any attention. We understood this problem 3 years ago. I don't want there to be, you know, this feeling out in the community that somehow staff, you know, lost sight of this. Hasn't been the case at all. Big portion of the discussion is how do we raise revenue. And there was discussion, a great deal of it, with regards to potential revenue from the sale and the development of certain properties. 2 years later, you know, we're still without that revenue. I don't want people to think the staff, myself, or anybody else here on council have just forgotten about this. Yeah. We haven't.
I think I still have.
Yeah.
The floor. You know, that's not my tone or tenor at all. I actually feel like we're still in a pretty good place. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're actually being, you know, responsible, and Diane's being very responsible and bringing it up during the process. I think that's a part of this process, and we're in a good place, you know, to be asking these questions and setting ourselves up so that, you know, we don't get to a cliff, you know, next year on this particular item. So, no, I don't in any way, shape, or form. That's not mine.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. I'll only speak for myself. I'm not interested in seeing the budget redone for you to solve the problem. That wouldn't be my intention. That might be not what your intention is. I'd be more interested to just come back with a outside of the box, what are all of our options for looking at this going into 2014? Because I think, to Councilman Gamble's point, you know, we just want to, there might be some clarity that we want going into 2015. If we at least had more clarity as to what options are available to us, then it wouldn't be as nerve-wracking waiting until 2014 to solve it.
Okay.
I don't even know if you said, well, if we did the first quarter of 2015, what that even means, because we've heard $1 million is what we need, down to $250,000. Does putting $50,000 aside in the budget that calls for $1 million accomplish anything? I don't know if it does or not. So I would much rather have staff come back with, here's the options, and there are several options. There's the general fund, there's the street fund, there's REIT money, there's the voter approved tax, you know, the property tax, again, even if we raise it, is a drop in the bucket. It doesn't even get us close to what we need. So I just like to maybe have an open discussion about the options, so maybe the council members that will be here in 2014 feel a little bit better about going into what their options are, because I don't believe we even have to wait till November. We could have an election much sooner than that, so we have, again, an answer prior to that. So I don't feel the pressing need that we have to solve it today, but maybe just get some information and have some discussion towards that.
Absolutely.
Councilor.
Yeah, I appreciate Councilor Williams. Very good. Total agreement.
Thank you. I just want to concur with Councilmember Williams. I don't feel staff lost sight of this. I know it's been an issue. It's been we've been in a recession. I think staff have done an amazing job keeping a high level of service with what we would, you know, following sales tax revenue when it did. Things are turning around. We're adding staff. We are in a good position, as Councilman Gamble said. We're in a good position to look at this and have the discussion. I think it's our responsibility, and it's being prudent and wise to go, we know this is going to run out. Let's have a discussion of the options. And it might be we decide if you bring a couple options, not solving it, but just a couple options that we would say, none of these options are acceptable right now, but at least having the discussion
is prudent.
Yeah. And it's just looking at options and then having some sort of a plan moving forward. We know it's running out at the end of 2014. It just makes sense to look at it and plan, and it might be that none of the options are acceptable right now. So, okay. Thank you for the clarification.
And anytime I can clarify.
I'm sure you will.
Is that
in that direction?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right.
All right, lastly, and new business is adopt pay for performance policy for non-represented employees. I've been working.
I was going to do a PowerPoint, but after two of them, first thing is, for those of you, specifically Councilmember Gearing, like the redline version, that didn't get uploaded. Does anyone else want the redline version of the policy?
Yeah.
For some reason, those didn't get uploaded. So effectively, what I'm going to do tonight is go through the substantial changes that we made from the interim policy to the final policy, and then I'll kick it over to Councilmember Gamble, who's the head of the HR and Finance Committee. Effectively kept the spirit of the interim policy. All we did is we've included some dates of when the annual performance review will be completed, and also the mid-year. The annual performance will be completed by January 21st, and the mid-year by July 1st. And the other substantial change is in 3.1.2, under the responsibilities of the HR manager, the fourth bullet down. And after we've finalized the reviews in February and in July, I will bring back basically the completion rate to the HR and Finance Committee to let them know that we've done 100% of the reviews for these individuals, or we've done 98% and we're working on the other 2%. From there, whoever the chair is of that group will bring that back to the full council during council member reports and inform you guys of where we're at completion rate. That was another thing that we've added. The only other substantial change would be in 6.0, the salary range adjustments. There are, again, council sets an aggregate dollar amount to be used for merit increases during the budget cycle. The individual increases cannot exceed 10% of an employee's annual salary. And then employees who have not reached the top of their salary range shall be eligible for an increase. Such increase shall be added to their base rate of pay to compute the employee's new salary. The fourth bullet is employees who have reached the top of their salary range shall be eligible for an increase in compensation. This additional compensation is separate, non-cumulative, and must be earned on an annual basis. This increase will sunset at the end of the budget year. So, those are the substantial changes that we made from the interim into the final. At this point, I'll turn it over to Councilmember Gamble for any points he would like to add from the HR and Finance Committee standpoint.
You did a fantastic job. But no, I'll just give the context. I mean, we felt it was important because one of the components of this was to ensure that reviews happened on an annual basis. We know that was something that we all, staff, council, alike, would like to fix. And so we felt it was important as a part of the process that there was a check, and balance in that regard. So we will do it, and it will be twice a year,
to the Finance HR Committee, and then we'll report back. So that's the addition there. And let's see, the other notable one I think you covered was on 6.0, and that's the, for those that are at the top of the band, you know, and that's the component that, you know, this is a performance-based pay policy, and that, you know, it is a standard, you know, part of performance-based pay in the private sector as well, but there is that, you know, ability on an annual basis, even those that have reached the top of their compensation structure, to put something out there, you know, for them to strive for, as opposed to just capping out and nothing to work for. So that's that component there. So any questions? Councilor Hedevig.
Thank you. Ben, on the performance appraisal criteria, did you develop all those for every single position and job, or where'd you get them from? Were they being used before? I see that it's changed.
Yeah, we our old performance in rating document was very thick. So I tried to thin it down in cooperation with a few of the other, you know, Eugene and a couple other of the managers. I asked them what's important for them to see, what do they want to rate their employees on, and this is the byproduct of that. But to put it in perspective, I think there was about 25 different criteria that we graded people on performance from prior to. I think that gets a little bit too granular. I think you can hit, we care about these 8, and we can dish in some goals in there as well that kind of go with these. So it was about making a form that would be easier to do, but yet just as meaningful.
So is it the same form with the same criteria no matter what the job?
Correct.
Okay. No matter what the level?
For the non-reps, yes.
Okay. So. Okay. So a director and manager have the same amount of responsibility and are held to the same standard, even though they have a different range and different pay scale and different responsibilities according to their job description?
Same categories, different responsibilities.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you got to look at it in the context of, you know, quality of work or judgment and communication is going to be varying. Those are just, you know, areas that you're going to review, and then obviously the expertise required for each one of those
would vary.
Dependent upon the position.
Okay, that's what I was trying to.
But for standardization of the process, yeah.
The categories are the same.
Exactly.
Okay, so the categories are the same, it's just the what the measurable outcomes might be different.
Correct.
Okay, thanks, Ben.
That was one of the things that Ben's talking about, reducing the categories on our old evaluation forms. It was kind of crazy because it was the same form for whether you're a line staff or manager or director, and the questions were repetitive. So it was really crazy. You go through the first section, and then you go into the manager section and answer pretty much the same questions. And we've taken those, I think, from some other cities when we first created it, but it was really redundant. So I think we've got a pretty good product in it.
Councilor McGee.
Yeah, and the one that I was going to point out also was in the appraisal ratings, and it is in the redline copy. And that was on the in the actual ratings, the 1 through 5 scale. We did add in the new to role and to the meet expectations. And if you get the question of, hey, what does that mean? And, you know, it's important that we still have the ability to compensate someone that may be new to role, you know, within the first 6 months of employment. Because they may need improvement where the performance may be, you know, at that level, but that's to be expected because they're new to role. And you may be training them up, whatever the case may be, so they might not be meeting their productivity requirement or whatever the case. They would still fall into that meets expectations because they're new to role and would be eligible for, for a raise if applicable.
But more than likely not 100% of their target because they're new to role. What?
I'll be up to you.
Yes.
Councilmember Geary.
Thank you. I move to approve policy 2013-00, implementing a performance-based pay structure for non-represented staff.
Second. Motion has been made by Councilmember Geary and seconded by Councilmember Williams to approve policy number 2013-00, implementing a performance-based pay structure for non-represented staff. Any other questions or comments? right, seeing no one's here to comment, so take a vote on the motion. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, first in final action this evening is the ordinance setting property tax levy, second and final read. Is Diane?
There is one change to the final ordinance in that we use the template prescribed by the Department of Revenue, but our city attorney, out of an abundance of caution, his favorite term, wanted the amount of the levy in section one. In section one, the first reading, it had the zero increase, $0 increase, and 0% increase. But he also, in addition, wanted the actual levy amount in there. So in the final ordinance, it says the levy in the amount of $1,968,000, whatever it is. And Edie has made that change to the ordinance. So I just wanted to make sure that you knew that there was a difference between the first reading and this final ordinance.
Thank you. Councilman Camp.
Thank you. I move to accept a second final reading ordinance 015/2013, setting property tax levy for 2014.
Second. Motion's been made by Councilmember Camp, seconded by Councilmember Davis to accept the second final reading ordinance 015/2013, setting property tax levy for 2014. Any other comments, questions for Diane or statements? All right, seeing none, we'll have the city administrator read the official title of the ordinance.
City of Monroe Ordinance Number 015-2013, an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, fixing the amount of taxes to be levied by the city for the calendar year 2014.
All right, we'll go ahead and take a vote on the motion at this time. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Diane. Thank you, Council. All right. We are looking at an ordinance amending Municipal Code 2.24.050, Council Compensation. Recommended action this evening is a motion to waive council rules and to accept as first and final. But first to speak on that is the Council Finance HR Committee Chair. Or City Administrator Bradwell.
Turn on the chair.
All right, so we brought, we've discussed this, we've had a public hearing on the matter. You know, we provided the feedback on the algorithm and the way that we arrived at where we were at. Again, just as a reminder, compensation has not been addressed from a council perspective since 1998, if I remember correctly. So the intent and the reason why we're waiving or asking for the waive of council rules procedures, we felt important to vote on this before the general election. As most of you know, that, and for the record, a vote on this, a council member cannot vote for a pay raise for themselves. Those members that are up for re-election, if we wait until after the election, would not be eligible for said compensation. So we wanted to make sure that, that was eligible for those. And I'm trying to think of anything else. Is there anything else from the two other committee members that would want to add? And final piece is that, really this is to try to set us up so that we can have a lot more folks on the primary ballot next time around and compensate for the extra activity that most council members participate in addition to committee meetings and for that, simplify the pay structure.
Thank you, Councilmember Kedebeck.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing this. I would like to make, it's not in the motion, but just a recommendation that if this is approved and we go forward, that we still will have three remaining council members who will not be eligible for this increase. Is that correct?
Yes, Council.
So my hope is that in the first of the year, maybe we do appoint a salary commission and look at that, or I'm not sure what the procedure is, but there's an inequity of having four council members making one salary and three not. So however, we need to go through the process to change that. That's something I would recommend that we do when we look at in the first quarter of 2014. It's not included in this motion, but I just wanted to, when we made it, someone makes a motion, but make that recommendation down the road that we look at that.
All right, thank you. I do have a motion to waive council rules of procedure requiring a second reading of the ordinance.
So moved.
Second.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Williams, seconded by Councilmember Pinnaback. Any comments or questions with regards to the motion? All right. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And would anyone like to make a motion to accept this first and final reading, ordinance 016-2013, amending Monroe Municipal Code 2.24.050 pertaining to council compensation?
So moved.
Second.
I don't want to reread it.
All right, motion's been made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Davis. And Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. I just have a comment on page 204 in the where we show the actual section of the code that's getting redone. And this is the first time we've seen this actually written, but it always seemed odd to me that we talked about elected or reelected and it excludes appointed. And that's actually happened in the 4 years that I've been on council. And so it seems like we should include that statement, elected, re-elected, or appointed, just so that we don't have that hole there.
That's a good point.
So a friendly amendment to the ordinance states, I'm sorry, which section was that again?
I'm on page 204. I'm looking at the red line copy. And it's 2.24.050. Council members who are first elected, re-elected, or appointed to a term. So just adding that.
Adding two appointed.
All right, so they do read council persons who are first elected, re-elected, or appointed to a term commencing on or after January 1, 2014.
Excellent.
Accepted as a friendly amendment and voted and seconded. Okay. City Administrator Brazel, would you please read the official title of the ordinance?
City of Monroe, ordinance number 016-2013, an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, amending chapter 2.24 MMC, compensation for mayor and council, providing increased compensation for council members, providing for severability, and establishing an effective date.
And any other questions or comments? We'll take a vote on the motion then. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. We are moving on to council reports. Councilmember Geary, anything to report?
Not tonight, thank you.
Nothing. Councilmember Williams? And Councilmember Kim?
Nothing.
Councilmember Davis?
Nothing for me.
He's doing fine. Come on, Councilmember Gamble.
What? Jeez. Monroe Youth Football.
Pee Wee Live?
Yeah, the playoffs begin this weekend.
Councilmember Hepburn.
Nothing for me.
I'm playing off that. Monroe Bearcats won on Friday night, and should they win against Mount Vernon on Friday, they are also in the playoffs. So good fun for football enthusiasts. Staff, anything this evening, Jeff?
No, sir.
Right, Paul? John? Jacob? Ben?
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know we are going to be getting a new phone system. Currently, we pay about $15,000 as a change for annual maintenance. Buying a new phone system costs about $50,000 all in. So it's kind of like that old car that you have that you always pour oil in, trying to maintain it. Well, it's kind of like a new car. Originally, I thought we would have to go out and finance this, but I've been able to, in working with Diane and looking at our ending fund balance for the IT budget, that I'm going to be able to pay for half of it this year, and the vendor has let me pay the extra after the books open in 2014. So all in, the new phone system will be installed December 1. We got the phones through an NJPA, which is a cooperative, which gets ensures that we get the best price without having to go through a formal RFP process, much like Jacob buys our vehicles. So December 1st, we'll get a new phone system that we'll be able to do most of the work, the maintenance and updates in-house. Today we can't. We have to get someone out here to do it. and finding parts for these phones is getting very difficult. So let you know what's going on.
Thank you.
Thanks. Mike, anything else?
No reports.
If I just might say, just with regards to the skateboard park, I think it's awesome that we've gotten to this point. And I know that's been a long time planning, but very good job with that. And I will not be out on the park myself skating, but I'll certainly look forward to watching this skating.
I'll be on the sidelines as well. The way.
I tried that once with the razors. Oh, okay. I decided to show my kids how I can ride a razor. Hit the lip on the curb, fell over, and busted my head open. So that was fun. All in about 30 seconds. Anyways, Diane, anything else?
Nothing.
All right. Brad, anything today?
Nothing.
And Chief?
Nothing police related, but being subject that already come up, I would like everyone to take notice of the great football season that the fantastic Pac-12 leading Oregon Ducks are having.
Oh. He's on the record too.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
Point of order.
Yeah.
Okay, it's going to happen.
Sergeant Amar.
Where's the bailiff?
Well, City Administrator Rattle, anything this evening?
Since we have this on the record, it's still Chief. The O for Oregon still stands for the number of national titles.
Did we form a committee?
I have a couple things. I first wanted to just thank Paul for all his hard work. If you guys don't know, Paul's been burning the midnight hour for months, and I just really appreciate all the dollars he's been putting in, and I appreciate him making the changes to the public hearing today. I know that was a lot of work, but I appreciate that, Paul. I also want to thank John. We got the call from the city of Stanwood just about a week ago. They lost one of their operators. I don't know if the person left, what the circumstances were, but they have not been able to find another operator, so they're down to one, and apparently in Snohomish County it's a challenging thing right now to find people that even want to be in that industry. They reached out, and John responded and talked to their public works director, and we may be in the queue to help them out here a bit. We're not sure what the components are or what actual duties need to be performed, but we've done this before for other communities, and so I just want to thank John and let council know that we may be helping Stanwood out as well. The last thing I have for you, last week many of the staff met myself and brought together projects that they've seen throughout the community that they'd like to see happen, things that we've talked about in the past, things that council has mentioned. So we put all those together, and I will give council a copy of that. And we realized that next year, the first part of next year, we'd like to start working with council to have some committee meetings, some focus groups, that type of thing, to start accomplishing some of these things. Like the municipal campus is one of those we talked about for a number of years, but we're at that point where I think we need to start doing some focus groups on it. We haven't had goals in a couple of years due to the budget problems we've been dealing with, but I think it's time to get back to starting to set some of those things in place. So anyway, that's first quarter of next year, we'll be looking at that, but I will get you the list.
Jeff, when are we bringing the LTAC?
Well, it'll come probably about the same time as the budget. Council cannot act until 45 days, so clock is ticking on that, probably 30 days out.
I just mentioned that because we had an LTAC meeting this afternoon, and we'll be bringing the recommendations to council whenever he said. Also, during that meeting, Anique Bennett reminded me that or shared that she has now raised how much?
$6,200
in sponsorship for Light Up and Row for the Christmas tree for November 30th, and so place that on your calendars.
I myself, as many of you might know, have my mother-in-law is very ill, and we are going to be gone that week, and so I've asked Councilor DeCamp to be available for Light Up Monroe in my absence. We're taking that time to spend with my mother-in-law, and most likely we'll probably be saying goodbye, but so not to be sad, but to say to Light Up Monroe, we really look forward to that, and I thank Councilmember Camp for being available. So, draft agenda.
Thank you, Mayor. Draft agenda for November 12th, 2013. For public hearings, we have the first public hearing on the 2014 preliminary budget. Consent agenda. Under new business, we have ordinance adopting marijuana-related land use regulations, the first reading. Number two, introduction code of ethics amendments. Number three, introduction 2013 comprehensive plan, land use, housing, and economic development, text amendments, excuse me, and the draft agenda for November 19th, 2013.
Anything to add or subtract from that, Councilman?
Is there a need for an executive session this evening?
No need.
Then I move to adjourn.
Second.
All right. Motion to be made by Mr. Geary. Second. Yep. To adjourn. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.